On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we take a look at the NL West, which looks a little bit different than it has for quite a while as the Padres are in first place. We talk about the Dodgers' struggles, why the Padres have been so good, where they go from here with some big games coming up against each other coming up. Also, we interview Mookie Betts. Ever heard of him? He's a pretty good baseball player. We talk to him about a difficult season so far for the Dodgers and him individually and what he's taken away from that experience. Hopefully you'll enjoy that conversation. And then, of course, it's Friday. We've got the good, the bad, the ugly, and so much more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello, and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks the Little League Classic should be big leaguers and little leaguers playing alongside one another. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And like, I'm not saying adults versus kids, like you mix up the teams a little bit, but I think that that would be, make it fair. Like, doesn't need to be lopsided, but let's put, you know, Julio Rodriguez in center, little Jimmy in left, you know, and let's play ball.
So I'm glad you say that. We are going to have some Little League World Series chat on this pod. I am heading to Williamsport tomorrow. I'm so excited to be back at the Little League Classic for the first time in 7 years. We normally, when you present that hypothetical that you just gave, normally we like to think about, oh man, what if big leaguers just played on the Little League field? You know, you had big leaguers versus big leaguers on, you know, at Lomedy Stadium.
Yeah.
But I like this idea of mixing up, and I would be curious strategically, where would you put the little leaguers? Would you just put them in the corner outfielders? Because honestly, the field is so small, you could just have your big leaguers in the outfield essentially serving as infielders. They would be able to get the ball fast enough and get it back into the bases just as they were as infielders. But also, there's a lot of just like safety issues involved with putting little leaguers in the infield against, you know, Giancarlo Stanton.
That is the wussification of America. Safety issues.
Wow.
When I was a kid and we were drinking lead water and, you know, snorting asbestos, we didn't worry about safety issues. We just ripped line drives at unsuspecting 11-year-olds.
You just found a way to win.
We did.
You just found a way. Yeah, no, it's fine. That's a good point. We are that old. All right. We'll save the Little League chat for later on. This is quite the episode we've got coming up. A Baseball Barbacast, the special Friday edition. We have a special guest. His name is Mookie Betts, I believe. He will be joining us a little bit later, and we will tee up that interview. But before we talk to Mookie Betts and give you the good, the bad, the ugly on this wonderful Friday, we're going to talk about Mookie Betts' baseball team and the team that they are now chasing, the San Diego Padres. That is our opener.
So take a good look at those MLB standings. My computer is now in a place where if I just type the letter S into my search bar, right? It just MLB standings, regular season, boom, every day, every morning. And the LA Dodgers, who have been in the top spot in the NL West since the end of April, are no longer looking down. They are looking up. They are, as we wake up this morning on Friday, August 15th, they are in second place. One game behind their hated rival, San Diego Padres. And this weekend, the Californian Derby will take place at Chavez Ravine in Los Angeles. It is going to be scintillating, titillating baseball. What I think has become the best rivalry in the sport with high stakes. We're going to talk about what it'll be like and how the heck we got here. Because on opening day, or even as late as the beginning of July, it did not feel like these Dodgers-Padres series were going to have narrative heft.
Yeah, and I think let's talk about those kind of important points along the way, right? Entering the season, wow, I mean, Dodgers might win 130 games. How is anybody possibly going to catch them? And then early on in the season, remember, they didn't play each other for the first 2 months. Their first matchup did not come until the middle of June when they played seven times in a 10-day span. And the Dodgers, at that point, right before they played for the first time, the Padres were two back. And so going into that stretch, it was like, okay, at this point, we already know because of all the injuries that the Dodgers are clearly very good, but not necessarily this historic team. They do seem vulnerable. And we had those conversations right before they played that stretch. Like, all right, here we go. Dodgers two back. Can they pass the Padres here? Instead, the Dodgers take five out of seven in those, what did I say?
You said that the Padres were in first and the Dodgers were two back.
Okay, I apologize. The Dodgers were still two games up going into those seven games. And it was like, okay, are they going to screw this up? No. Dodgers take five out of seven over the Padres over those 10 days. And then they start to build a lead to be even bigger, to the point where in the beginning of July, on July 3rd, the Dodgers swept the White Sox. And they were nine games up on both the Giants and the Padres, I think, at that point. They were both tied. We know that the Giants ultimately not really a serious character in this discussion. But that was July 3rd, okay? So just a little over a month ago, nine-game lead. Here they go again. Maybe the Dodgers aren't going to win 120, but they're going to cruise to another division title. Instead, since then, the Dodgers have been one of the worst teams in baseball. The Padres, one of the best. And now here we are with the Padres overtaking them with a chance to extend their lead this weekend in Los Angeles.
Just both unpredictable and completely obvious at the same time. I think that we are guilty of this, where before the season it was like, are the Dodgers the greatest team of all time? And it's like, that was one warranted to a point because they had spent so much money on the team and they had so many famous good players and they had just won the World Series, right? But the number of volatile things that happen during a baseball season, it is very difficult to win 115 games, 110 games. It is difficult to win 100 games. And I think that it has been very clear with how the Dodgers have operated this season that everything they do, whether that is like personnel, playing time, or player acquisition strategy, it is all about being ready on October 1st, ensuring that the team on October 1st is the best that it can possibly be. And now that it manifests itself in terms of like, when do we bring Shohei back onto the mound? How many innings do we want from pitcher X? How much bullpen usage do we want to use? You and I kind of disagree a little bit on this point. But I have seen this Dodgers season. They are in a way treating it like an extended spring training, right? Where it's like, let's sim to August. See where we're at, and then go. And the Dodgers, to their credit, built a good enough team that they've essentially been able to coast to 68-53. But now the math is uncomfortable, right? Now the season begins.
It's so funny, though, because that premise of, oh, the Dodgers aren't taking the regular season as seriously as we want them to, you know, let's go back to that first series in June. If you recall, the Dodgers win in dramatic walk-off fashion in the series opener. And then the very next day, again, it's still a two-game gap. Because of just where they were with the pitching, the Dodgers roll out Lou Trevino as an opener and then let Matt Sauer allow nine runs. And Kike Hernandez pitches the last three innings of the game. And in a blowout, and I understand that it's like, oh, and then at the time people were like, wow, the Dodgers are just punting this game in the middle of this division race. Now, clearly over the next 10 days, it was like, okay, yeah, see, the Dodgers are fine. Like, they knew what they were doing, and then they built the lead back up. And so while it was annoying in the moment, it was hard to be like, hey, you're doing it wrong, because they built that lead back up and their pitchers got back healthy and they won that series and they won the next series and it was all fine. Now, as you mentioned, referring to this as the season actually beginning, there is no, you cannot just keep saying like, oh, we got time. We're good. We're chilling. We'll build this lead back up. Now the Dodgers are not in first place. Now the Dodgers do have their team for the most part. And so in theory, they should be able to put out their A squad and use their A relievers. But even as recently as this week, I believe they're, you know, or we've still had situations where you're looking at the bullpen, you're like, is this really who you're going out there? My pushback on the premise is that there are also just parts of this team that aren't as good as we thought. Now, some of that is on offense. Some of that is on defense. Some of that is just the bullpen, right? Now, that is still being hampered by injuries. They have a ton of guys still hurt, but they don't have as many guys where you're like, oh, yeah, that's a good reliever. Most of those guys are still on the IL.
Sure. I don't know if I believe what I'm going to say, but let's talk through this. So one narrative about the Dodgers is that the pitchers get hurt, right? And that's not just a narrative. I mean, that's a fact. I'm looking at their IL and it's, you know, even still, even with Glasnow back, Snell back, Kershaw back, Ohtani back, Emmett Sheehan back, the IL is still Gonsolin, Kyle Hurt, River Ryan, Roky Sasaki, Gavin Stone, Gratterall, Grove, Kopech, Phillips, Scott, Stewart, Kirby Yates, right?
The second names are more important to the conversation right now.
Phillips, Scott, Stewart, Yates, yeah. Why do Dodgers pitchers get hurt at a higher rate? I don't think it is anything that the Dodgers are doing differently with how they treat pitchers or how they how they develop guys in the minor leagues, but it is about the types of pitchers that they prioritize and acquire, right? Like they went out and they are more willing to acquire a player with a higher injury risk because if they're ready to go on October 1st, like who cares? Like it doesn't matter. And like Brock Stewart, who they traded for at the deadline, who is really good when he plays and never plays, is the perfect example of that, right? Where it's like, when you try and understand how the Dodgers got to this point on Friday, August 15th, being a game back, a big chunk of that is the lack of continuity and consistency in the entire pitching staff. And I think that that is in some way part of the plan, a byproduct of a strategy that because they have this massive payroll, they're able to like take a swing and give Kirby Yates, I think he was like $10 million or at age 38, or trade for Brock Stewart, right? Like if they have 26 dudes that are ready to roll on October 1st, none of it matters. Again, I don't know if I believe what I just said, but I just wanted to test that out. Thoughts and opinions.
Yeah, well, no, I see what you're sort of hinting at, and Tanner Scott is a weird one in that conversation because that is a bold risk to give a reliever that much money. At the same time, you would say Tanner Scott, one of his superpowers is that he hasn't been hurt at any point. He's pitched right in more games very than true almost any reliever over the last, you know, 3-4 years. And you could say that's a bad thing. He still throws hard, and of course he was going to get hurt at some
Glass
point. Glasnow and Snell, of course. So, but I just want to, let's just still focus on why they are not playing well right now, why they have been losing games for the last month, why they have the same record as the Rockies. Let's say that again. They have the same record as the Rockies.
Oh no.
Not since Sunday. I'm not just, this is not just over a week where the Cardinals or where the Rockies took a series of the Cardinals and the Dodgers got swept by the Angels. No. Since July 3rd, both of these teams, 12-21. Or I guess the Rockies lost last night. So there you go, Dodgers. You're better than the Rockies.
Congrats. Anyway, you did it. Raise the banner.
You look at the statistical profile of the team, and especially as we bring the Padres back into this, you start to see where the Padres have an edge. The Padres have already had the best bullpen, or at least the case for the best bullpen, added Mason Miller. I know Mason Miller hasn't been flawless so far, but still, that is a team clearly with the number one bullpen ERA in the sport. And the Dodgers' bullpen ERA is 20th, and their starting pitching ERA is 18th. And it's just because in the past, even when the bullpen has been more one of the more anonymous or clearly the most anonymous part of the roster, it's still been effective basically every year, you know? And so this is a huge difference that they are now dealing with, that when these starters who are now back and talented, but still not going deep into games, at least not yet, you have a lot of innings to cover. And when your offense is merely
offense
very good, but not the best we've ever seen, now we run into some issues.
I'll just fly through some of the players on the position player side. Like Muncy, since getting glasses, has been unbelievable, but hurt a lot. Ohtani, what a thing. Like, He has been, I think he has 18 home runs since he started pitching again. On July 17th or whatever.
That's a great sentence. Oh, man. You know, that's just,
it's just so dope. He's amazing. Will Smith, unbelievable. Incredible. Right?
Not playing that
I
much.
I would say, not playing that much.
He's like
over the course of
like
the full
crazy
season.
Expensive, you know, sports car that you can only drive twice a week.
The only three players on offense that have performed at or above expectations on a regular basis this year for the Dodgers are Ohtani, Will Smith, and Andy Pages, okay, who's been a delightful surprise for them. Freddie has been fine. He has been regular, maybe slightly below what we expected from Freddie. Unbelievable for 2 months. Pretty bad for a month and a half. He has been, I would say, over the last month, he's been Freddie Freeman. Totally do. Like, great.
Really good.
Though
really, really good.
Mookie Betts, who we'll talk to in a bit, worst year of his career. We talked to Mookie about that a little bit. Bad. Like, just bad. And he's been honest about that. But, like, this is not Mookie Betts. You do not expect this from Mookie Betts. And over the last month, he has been very disappointing. That is also true about Teoscar Hernandez, who they brought back on a 3-year deal over the winter. He has been bad. And then, like, those are the two guys who you expect to be big contributors that have been blah. But then there's, like, the next level down, right? Dudes are hitting 6, 7, 8, 9, let's say. Tommy Edman, bad and hurt. Ha-Seong Kim, bad and hurt. We're giving a ton of at-bats to Estuary Ruiz and Michael Conforto.
I mean,
and
Conforto's
now Alex Call since the deadline.
Conforto, we have to just acknowledge this because he's the one that is getting the most flack because he signed a big contract and people know his name. And I was in. I thought he was going to be great. I really did. I was totally sold.
You were
this was
in.
Probably one of my biggest whiffs of the season. He's been atrocious. And like truly, I know that they've now, because they bring in Call, they're trying to make it more of a platoon situation. But no matter how they've shook it out, Conforto... That's the guy. I mean, these other small guys you've mentioned, I mean, sure, they're playing more now, but Conforto's up to, you know, almost 400 plate appearances at a 627 OPS. So that's been the real, actual, consistent weak spot that has not changed.
Well, and the Dodgers' just really passive approach at the deadline is relevant. So they add effectively no starters. They add one bullpen piece in Brock Stewart, and they add Alex Call, who can help them off the bench. The Padres get three everyday bats in Freddie Fermin, Ramon Laureano, and Ryan O'Hearn, and Mason Miller. And like, that's not here. This is why I listen to the pod. That's important and helpful. Like, freaking duh.
Yeah.
And Laureano has been awesome as a Padre. Fermin has been awesome. Now, granted, you know, small sample size, only a couple of weeks. But that boost already has the Padres up one game in the division.
Yeah. And, you know, our guy Dalton Rushing, who, of course, we believe in as a young player, has not been. Now, it's again, like, this was going to be his challenge, which is, can you contribute with very inconsistent playing time? So far, the answer has been no, at least offensively. And obviously, he's trying to get, you know, his feet under him from a defensive standpoint. So is he still giving him any less than Austin Barnes? Not really. But and of course, you think that this will pay off in the future when Dalton Rushing is getting more playing time. But again, when we talk about who is actually elite besides Ohtani, Will Smith and Max Muncy, just because their playing time has been limited, Max Muncy because of injuries, Will Smith, like, this is, let's just put this in perspective about Will Smith, not to make everything about Cal Raleigh, but this puts it in perspective. They have caught a similar number of innings. Okay, I believe Cal Raleigh's caught about 50 more innings.
Yeah.
Cal Raleigh has 150 more plate appearances this season because of all the DH reps that he's getting. So yeah, on WRC Plus, you know, Will Smith is has him beat right now. But he's just not in the lineup that much because he's obviously not DHing and you're trying to get him off his feet and you're not putting him at first base. So you have this incredible hitter who's just not playing every day, which is amazing, which is like both a luxury and in some cases, in this case, it's like, well, actually, you maybe do need Will Smith in the lineup every day. And so I know they're trying to keep him fresh because he faded in the second half the last few years. They want him to be better in October. They won the World Series last year with Will Smith doing almost nothing offensively in October. But he is an elite hitter, and he's not playing all the time. Yeah, sure. No, it's part of it. It's part of it.
Like, if the Dodgers – now, I'm not saying they should do this. If the Dodgers on March Tokyo 10th or whenever they went over to Japan, whatever day that was.
Yeah.
They on that day were like, our goal is to break the Seattle Mariners record for the most games won in a regular season. They would handle decisions differently. Will Smith would be playing 6 days a week instead of four or five, right? Like 100%. I'm not saying they should do that. No one is out here to win. Like, you don't get pizza points for that. This is not the Premier League, right. You know? Still, I think that I'm very curious to see if, let's say, the Padres over these next six games, so they play three this weekend, three next weekend. If the Padres take, let's say, four, right? And they extend that lead out to, that would then be three games. Does Will Smith start playing more?
Right.
Like, are they going to shoehorn him in the left field? Like,
there are so many parts of how this could go where it's like, what is going to snap the Dodgers? What we talk about urgency as this amorphous concept. This applies to the Yankees too, whatever. But what are the buttons that they can press? That is the most obvious one. That is a great, that is literally the one. If Will Smith starts, you know, 8 days in a row, if he, again, it's like, it's weird because Ohtani's going to DH. You're not taking Ohtani out of the lineup. There's literally zero flexibility with that. Would you put him at first against a lefty? You know, like that's where you would get, but then you're taking Freddie Freeman out. Like, I don't know. Like, that's why this roster is so interesting. But what does that look like? What does urgency look like if they do start to fall behind and they do view it as we need to win this division? What are the buttons that they can press? Because ultimately, there are still a lot of good pitchers that are injured. And I guess you could rush those guys back. We don't really know what that means, but that's another thing that we could see, or you're letting Ohtani throw nine innings. Like, I don't know, but what that looks like, I'm curious to find out.
You can move Freddie to third like the Braves did that one time because Matt Adams was on a heater. I do think fans have a misconception about urgency. If you walk into the dugout before you're at bat and you just, you know, scream the word urgency, and you're like, I need to do a good job right now. Like, that does not create a good energy. Now, I'm not saying you should, you know, roll over to second base and walk to first, or like, you know, dog it out there. But urgency on a personal level doesn't do anything. Like, the Rockies they have urgency. Those players, they are urgently they're just not good. Usually when a team is not playing well, the players are not playing well. It's really just that simple. And I wish it was more than that, because it'd be more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But that is why people cling to these more intangible things, because amorphous. It's like, well, I'm looking at your baseball reference page and you should be better. And that applies to a lot of teams this season, right? Oh my gosh, right? That's what people, Mets don't have heart. Like, well, I think they're just not playing very well, or their players aren't as good as you thought. You know, and that applies to all of these teams when they are struggling. You have to ask those questions. So I do want to get back to the Dodgers and some of that perspective, because
just quickly,
set up our Mookie Betts conversation. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I would love for one super talented team 1 year to be like, before the season, we have no heart or urgency or grit.
We're telling you it now. So you can't.
We're letting you know now. You can't blame us later. And then they like make the playoffs, right? It's like,
yes.
We're good.
Hmm.
You know?
How do they do that if they weren't urgent?
Be urgent.
Like, yeah. Come on, guys. But anyway, so let's talk about the other side of this equation, which is the San Diego Padres are pretty good. And when I'm looking ahead and I'm seeing not just what's going to happen this weekend or next weekend or the rest of the way, it's like, okay, my concern is that last year we went into the postseason and we were all like, the Padres are the best team. Padres are the best team. Come on. This is it. This is the time. Let's see it. We feel great.
And then Mookie Betts viciously attacked Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
And it all went
downhill. That was Manny Machado. who did that. But that is right. So it didn't work out. Here we are again. You watch the Padres when they're playing well, and you're like, well, there can't be a better team than this. I mean, come on. I mean, this is just holy crap. I mean, look at all the talent. And now we have these, now we're adding Mason Miller, and now we have a deeper lineup. And, you know, you're seeing, but then also there's also part of this team that is not nearly as good as it was last year, because we still, this is not the same Jackson Merrill season. This is not the same Luis Arraez season. This is not the same. Now, some things are better, right? Bogaerts clearly way more of an actual help. Tatis has not been that awesome over the last couple months, right? Michael King's now hurt again. So, like, there are still real questions in the rotation for sure. Now, we love Randy Vasquez. Should he be playing A in any situation? Probably not. Pavetta, Cease has looked better. You know, talked about that with Lance earlier this week. Darvish has been pretty good. We'll see Nestor. I understand he's there to cover innings. I don't really want him starting a playoff game. But you're hoping that you have this super duper bullpen where you're just asking for five innings, right, from your starters, and you can go the rest of the way. Now, that works probably better in October than getting to October, because again, you still have a lot more games to play. I'm looking at this Padres team. I do see a ceiling that is, again, looking like the best team going into October, but it's also not, it's not fully functioning yet. They are playing very well. They have now gotten into first place. They just swept the Giants. But it's like maybe that there is actually more upside for this offensive group if we do get Tatis and Merrill going at a higher level. And so that's both exciting, but then also it's like, well, if that doesn't happen, is this lineup as scary as the Dodgers in any form, let alone some of these other teams? So where are you at on San Diego before we send it to Mookie?
The Padres are what we thought, I think. Like, we talked more about the Dodgers because I think that is the more surprising aspect of this conversation. Like, we thought the Padres were going to be a good wild card caliber team, and we thought the Dodgers were going to be sensational. And the Dodgers have been playing like a good wild card team, and the Padres have been playing very similarly over the course of the season, right? It's like it is one game separated. To me, the most enjoyable part of the Padres operation is the butts that are in the seats.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. They are second in attendance this year, ahead of the Yankees, ahead of the Phillies. Dodgers are won by a lot, both because they're the Dodgers and the stadium is just way bigger. Like, it's 55K. Like, it's a ton. I think it's the biggest stadium in the league, right? And so the Padres being second in attendance is just this beautiful proof of concept that if you invest in the team and you give a crap and you build something that's entertaining, you put a good product on the field, people, and you market it well, people will show up. And like, I'm just so happy. I know we've talked about this a ton. I'm just so happy for Padres fans who for 40 years were cheering for the most irrelevant franchise in baseball, right? When you named 30 teams, when you named the teams, they were the last team that you would think of.
Yeah.
And now they are a main character.
We started doing this in 2013 before AJ Preller showed up.
With all due respect to Chris DiMorfia,
it was, you know, Kyle Blanks, like, it was the bottom.
Everett Cabrera.
I have nothing to say about Chase Headley. But now here we are. And this is an awesome graphic from The Athletic. The lineup the last time the Padres held sole possession of first place this late in the season is 2010, with David Eckstein batting second, Will Venable. We've got, there's Chase Headley and Hundley, the Headley-Hundley combo, of course, Adrian Gonzalez, Miguel Tejada
was hitting third.
That
Miguel
is,
Tejada.
In 2010, folks, again, it's a concerning fact. But no, I totally agree with you. Just big picture of the Padres. And we've been saying this for a few years now, but it remains very true. And now we will see if they can finally do it, topple the Dodgers in the regular season. And the last note about that before we get to Mookie Betts is, while these games coming up could very well determine it, these are the last, you know, six games they're going to play against each other. Opportunity for one team to jump ahead. Maybe they end up splitting and it stays close. The other thing to keep in mind is these two teams have the two easiest schedules remaining in baseball. Why is that? It is very simple. It is because both teams still have seven more games against the Rockies and three more against the Orioles and the Padres play three more against the White Sox, Dodgers play three more against the Pirates. So it's also possible that this comes down to how well you do against the bottom of the league. Can you munch up those victories against those bad teams? Because if you're dropping those games against Colorado, against Baltimore, who would drop games against Baltimore during a heated postseason race, by the way? No good team would do that, right? No? Okay. Yeah, I think that could be important. That could be important. How spunky the Rockies are at the end of the season trying to not lose 122 games could have an impact on this as well. So we will see. We will see how it goes. But with all that said, you're going to hear a conversation that we had a couple days ago with Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, Mookie joining us on behalf of a sponsor that you'll hear more about, but obviously an opportunity we were not going to pass up, and a time we recorded this on Wednesday. This is, of course, in the middle of their series with the Angels. They ultimately end up getting swept, but this was obviously, it's cool to get to talk to a player like Mookie Betts and have him reflect on his career is a cool opportunity. So we hope you enjoy this conversation, because that in some ways speaks for itself, but also it is an interesting time, and Mookie was not hiding from that. He was very honest about not just his personal season that he's been dealing with, but also the season that the Dodgers are having, and being very real that, like, this has been different. There are other good teams. It is not that easy. Just because we have all these future Hall of Famers does not give us anything. So I won't spoil any more, but we hope that you enjoy this conversation with future Hall of Famer and Dodgers shortstop Mookie Betts. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbecast. We are now very excited to be joined by the one and only Mookie Betts, joining us on behalf of Corona. Mookie, thank you so much for taking some time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
We, in many ways, cannot relate to your life. One thing that we do have in common is podcasting. You have been doing your show now for a couple of years. You've interviewed some of the biggest stars in our sport. And I'm curious, now that you've had, like, time to kind of look back on all the people you've had on and all the people you've talked to and those conversations that you've had, like, what have you learned from that experience, having those chats with some of the biggest names in our sport?
Obviously, everybody's a normal person, right? They all have normal things going on. But really, just that the bond in baseball is we all have similar lives in some way, form, or fashion, right? We all have other things that we love doing. We all have just some passion. We love our families. It's just a lot of, we all are essentially very similar. And you would think that guys from Dominican, Cuba, Texas, Boston, wherever, right, we'd have completely different things, completely different views on life and whatnot, but a lot of it's the same, right? We all kind of went through the gauntlet the same way, and I think going through minor leagues and summer ball and all these type of things kind of shapes and molds us into very similar people. And then you just get here and you get to the big leagues, and there's only 750 of us, and out of all these people, 750 guys are probably going to be very similar in some way, form, or fashion. And I really have loved talking to guys and really kind of seeing what gets them going. And it's very similar to the things that kind of gets me going.
When you're the one asking that question, like, what has that been like? Has it been more difficult than you thought? Has it been interesting? Has it been, like, informative?
Yeah, it's been a little more difficult because playing in the sport, and I understand how hard it is. So I don't,
right.
It's hard for me to ask someone, like, you know, you haven't been playing great this year. What is this going on? Or you have been playing great this year. What are you doing different? X, Y, and Z. And it's like, those questions don't go over very well, especially coming from another peer, right? And you know, obviously guys that haven't played, you know, it's, you want to know, right? But for me, it's, that's the part that I don't really like doing, just because I do understand, you know, what kind of goes into it. I understand the days. I understand that tomorrow you could get 4 hours of sleep because of a baby at home or whatever it is, right? But nobody cares that you got in at 3 o'clock in the morning, you had to play it, you know? So those are things that I don't like asking, but I do understand the other side that of asking.
All right, enough meta podcasting about podcasting. Let's talk a little bit about the Dodgers, but we want to go big picture here, because I think for you and your career, having arrived with the Dodgers in 2020, I'm not asking you to reflect as if your time there is over. I mean, you have many years of the deal. I know a lot left you want to accomplish, but as you've seen this team and this operation, this organization ascend to these levels that we really haven't seen from teams in the past in terms of the way they're perceived, the way they're treated, the way they're covered, how do you like welcome someone into that world? I know you guys just got someone in the trade deadline. Like, how do you kind of maintain as one of the leaders of this team to treat it as if it's any other team, even though, let's be honest, it's not really any other team?
I mean, it's just that you just kind of let them go through their experience. Cause everybody's going to take it differently. And being a Dodger has been a beautiful thing. All the stuff off the field, all the opportunity and whatnot, is amazing. And then obviously, the product that we put on the field is amazing as well. But there's a lot of really good products on the field right now, man. There's a lot of really good teams out there. And so we're no better than the next team, right? There's teams that have been playing better. And, so that it's the baseball aspect is one thing that, it's a very level playing field, but the off the field stuff, the opportunities and whatnot, that's where I think being a Dodger definitely kind of ascends to the top.
But like between the lines, it's ball, right?
It's ball. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's me, Shohei, or whoever, or the next person, right?
Yeah.
It's ball. It's ball, and you got to play. That's what's going to prove who wins.
I can imagine if you're coming into that and you're looking around, it's like, he's going to be in Cooperstown. Like, he has more money than God. Like, he's on every billboard in America. Like, that can be intimidating for someone coming into that a little bit, right? Have you seen that at all?
I would say, I have a lot, especially the young guys. They come up, and I think it's a little overwhelming. I don't know if overwhelming is the right word, but you come in and you look and you see all these guys and you're like, wow, I'm getting to play with all these guys, which is, I'm sure, is really cool. I know I was talking to Carl the other day when Shohei was pitching. I think he gave up a leadoff homer or something, and then this is when I was leading off and I got a base hit, and then Shohei had a two run homer in the first inning, and it's like, it's just amazing to know that this guy just walked off the mound, hit a home run, he's about to go back on the mound. It's like stuff like that. Even for me, I've been playing. This is my first time seeing Shohei do both.
Like, do you get to appreciate that you're witnessing baseball history in the moment while you're watching it? Because obviously, like for us, when we watch this thing that is the Dodgers, it's history in the making. Yeah. Like, do you get opportunities to kind of take a breath? Does that happen in 15 years? Does that happen in the winter? Or does that not happen at all? I'm curious.
I mean, I feel like I'm doing my best to try and appreciate it now, because, there is no better moment than now. But in the grand scheme of things, I think that happens later. I think when you're in the grind and you're in it, you once you turn your brain off to go appreciate something, it's hard to turn it back on, and so you really have to just try and keep your brain on, and obviously not super intense and whatnot. You try and enjoy what you can, but you really have to try and stay on as much as possible, just because the game, man, the game is so unpredictable and so many things go on that you have to just stay ready.
Our last question here on the field that I'm curious about with your season in particular, obviously you've been very honest about, self-assessment of how you've been doing at the plate, certainly looking a lot better lately, but then this move to shortstop, a lot going on that's very different. Some things I'm sure you're very proud of, some things I'm sure you're very frustrated in. You've been very honest about the perspective that this season has kind of given you. What does that mean? How does that manifest on a day-to-day basis in a way that you're going about, your day that maybe you weren't 2 years ago or 3 years ago or earlier in your career with the Red Sox?
Going through this year and looking up and seeing that you're nowhere near on track for your goal, it's disheartening. It really sucks, especially when your whole career, you've gotten pretty close to your goals. Sometimes you've exceeded your goals.
Yeah. And the results are in your face every single moment you step
into play. Every single day. I mean, every reporter's asking, it's all the time. And so it really has taken me just to try and be, just win today. Do whatever you can to win today. You may be 0-for-4, but maybe you had a sack fly for an RBI that helped. Maybe you made a nice play in defense or whatever. That'll help. And since I've changed my mindset to that, it really has helped me get through every day. Just because, I mean, I look up and I see 230, and that is, it's hard. It really is hard. I've never had to do that. You know, I'm going through stuff now that I've never had to go through in my entire life, like ever. And so I don't know how to get out of this. You know, I don't know how to. And so the only thing that I can control is really just trying to help the guys win every day. And if I can do that, then, I mean, at least I can go to sleep at night.
I imagine there is also probably something that's a little freeing about that in a way.
For sure. It definitely, because you don't worry about the 0-for-4. Like, I mean, I've been doing that the whole time. But at least this 0-for-4, I moved the guy over, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
And as you mentioned, you win, you're happy. I mean, that's it. In some ways, that is going to be that simple, which I really appreciate that perspective and that honesty. All right, Mookie, before we get you out of here, we know you're teaming up with Corona to promote the Playa Sounds campaign. Tell us a little bit more about that, how you got involved and the production behind it.
So we just partnered, me and Corona, we partnered together to create this soundtrack that has taken some of the moments. So we went and got some of the moments from postseason. Some big intense moments, and then you mix them with the beach, right? You know, you think about the beach and you think about going to relax and whatnot, and kind of just puts you right in the middle, right? You're ready for intense moments with some relaxation in it. I really feel like it just puts me right in the middle, and it kind of, I don't want to be too intense in some of these moments because the intensity will be there. You don't need to manufacture anything because it's going to be there whenever it's time. And so it really just kind of puts me in the middle, man. And it just helps them relax, but be ready.
What kind of beach guy are you? Like, you sitting in the chair, watching the ocean, reading a book, you got, you know, music on, are you building a sandcastle with the kids? Like, what's, when Mookie goes to the beach, like what's he doing?
Hey man, I'm just kind of laying down and letting the kids do their thing. You know, I just kind of lay on the chair.
Yeah.
And if I see some beach volleyball, I'm definitely going to jump in some beach volleyball or something. But other than that, and then, yeah, I'm really just a chill guy. I love the waves coming in. That's what puts me to sleep. So I'm a big, just lay down and chill guy. I do enough for 8 months out of the year. I don't need to do any more.
No, but if there's a beach volleyball game, watch out, Mookie.
If there's a beach volleyball game, I'm in. I'm all in on that.
Well, good to know, Mookie. Another hidden talent. We didn't even have to bother asking about the bowling. Mookie, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it, man. And good luck the rest of the season.
Thank you, bro. Oh, by the way, that Lowell Spinners hat, I got to put that on a lot, so I know exactly what that looks like.
You think that was an accident? You think that was an accident? Come on now. We got to take you back. You come a long way. We appreciate it. Thank you, Mookie.
And welcome back on Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, me, Jordan Schusterman, that's the guy with the glasses. On our last episode of the show, I revealed to Jordan live on the air that the Minnesota Twins were not going anywhere, baby. The ownership situation was up in the air for a long time. The Pollard family in control, there were rumors about a sale. That did not actualize. And I read the statement and we guffawed and giggled. And that continues now with a special edition of Sorry for Your Mentions. Now, the tweet in question is the tweet that I read to Jordan, a letter from the Pollard family. Dearest Twins fans, comma. These are some of the responses. Jordan, I will kick it to you.
Yes, and of course, if you haven't heard this segment before, this is about the people tasked with sending out this letter, right? The apology is not to the poll ads. It is to the people who have to put this out there and as part of their job as admin, you know, take the fire because we know the poll ads aren't reading these replies, but we are going to. So sorry to whoever had to post this for your mentions. Let's begin with one from Thor, who says, I'm old enough to remember when you people wanted to retract the franchise. Stop holding this region hostage. Sell to someone who is serious about winning. It's a good
you
point.
You can trust good take. Thor.
If, you know so what I mean? True. Like, that's true. I don't know if there was a lot of Marlins fans named Thor, but in Minnesota, yeah, I feel pretty good about that being, whether this is this person's real name or not, that is strong. This one comes from Maddie. These ones are always kind of depressing when you have a team struggling and you have teams, people responding, being like, you know what? I'm actually going to go watch another team. This is from Maddie, adding the Brewers. Y'all got room for some Twins fans? Ooh, looking across the border.
Wow.
That's an interesting one. You know, we had during the rivalry weekend, we had these two teams facing off, and now it's just like, screw it. I'm hopping the border and becoming a Brewers fan. I don't blame you. I'd go get those free hamburgers. This one, next
our next one is from Hawkeye Enjoyer. Nothing says, quote, we are focused on building a winning team, like getting rid of everyone. This is perfect. Like, if you didn't know anything about the Twins ownership situation, you had no context, which is fine. This tells the story, right? If you are focused on building a winning team, if that is your primary goal, I understand that they have a lot of debit. They have a lot of debt. But still, yes. If I'm right now, Jordan, like here's an example. If I'm trying to write an article, I'm focused on the article. I don't have, you know, YouTube up watching highlights of the 2007 Reds, right? That's not what focus is. Trust me. Jake Mintz knows focus.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the things you're known most for. This one just kind of breaks my heart. This is from Al. I will never abandon the Twins, my favorite team in my favorite sport, but this really sucks. Oh, man. That one just cuts deep. That is not someone that is going to jump ship and start rooting for the Brewers. Like, that guy is just, he's in it. But it's just like, this is not anger. This is just like despondence. This is despair. This is just like, oh, just like a sigh of disbelief.
I'm just disappointed. Right.
Exactly. So that one just kills me. This next one makes me laugh. This one comes from Travis. I wish there was a way to make every single dollar I've spent on the Twins go directly to Byron Buxton's bank account. That, or I wish these players had Venmos. I'll stay home and throw $9 at the starting lineup every day. I want my loyalty going directly to the players. This is a very funny way to get at a very important macro concept that we will be discussing much as we lead into the CBA negotiations, which is, where does the money go to? Do the players get a larger percentage of the revenue than the owners? Or are, when you show up to Target Field, are the poll ads swimming in cash and Byron Buxton, who is of course well compensated, but maybe is not getting as much as he deserves as the face of this franchise, who has done nothing but show up and play and be awesome and be a model citizen and be a person who wants to be a Minnesota Twin. All of these great things that make us love Byron Buxton. We want, when we go and buy our $25 sodas and $35, you know, footlong hot dogs, that money should go to Byron Buxton and Luke Kuechel and whoever else comes up and actually entertains us as baseball players. Instead, we know not as large of a portion of it goes to them.
I just found Byron Buxton on Venmo.
I was also going to say, players do have Venmos, but I would not say that this is like a great strategy for showing your...
Don't do this. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to tell you what his Venmo is, but it is definitely his Venmo.
If Jake could find it in 3 seconds, you probably could too.
Well, it said two mutual friends.
No, okay. Well, no comment on that. All right, let's do one more mention. This is from Ashley. Is this like when Elmo's account got hacked? Like, this can't be real, right? I don't know what she's referring to about Elmo's account getting hacked, but that sounds like a terrible Twitter tragedy. And unfortunately, this is very real. I don't think all too real, I would say. I don't think they would fake this. This would be a really cruel joke. What a weird thing. If you hack, I'm trying to think of someone, what would the motivation be?
What an elaborate hack.
Post this. Yeah, like a really weird prank for that one. But anyway, sorry at Twins for your mentions. As for if we've learned anything else, I mean, Dan Hayes at The Athletic has given us some good reporting, which is basically that, you know, part of this announcement is that, like, we're not selling, but we are bringing in some minority investors who we can't tell you who they are, but they're going to help us pay down some of this debt and give us some more money that we can raise the payroll back up to, like, almost league average, maybe, maybe not. And Dan tweeting this out, you know, sources, the portion of the Twins that sold went for a higher valuation than the $1.7 billion estimate is, like, great. I'm so happy for the Poleds that they sold part of their team for more money than they expected. Wow.
You did
it. Throw the freaking parade. I'm so happy. So obviously it's like, yeah, Dan's doing his job. I mean, he's literally reporting. I'm not blaming Dan for putting that out there. It's just like, great. That's the last thing that people want to hear about right now is that the Twins are maybe the ownership's maybe doing a little bit better financially. It's like, all right, cool. Love that. Anyway, that is the update on the Twinkies. All right, Jake. Let's have a little bit more fun. It's Friday. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly.
Sometimes when we do good, bad, ugly, I'm like, this will be a good one. And then sometimes I'm just fired up. And today is one of those days. And I will get us rolling with my good, which is that the Milwaukee Brewers won their 12th game in a row, triggering that famous promotion at George Webb restaurants around the greater Milwaukee area for free ham burgers. That's right, folks. It happened. They did it. Free burgers at George Webb. If you live anywhere other than Wisconsin, honestly, anywhere other than Milwaukee, like there are not George Webb's. There's one George Webb outside the Milwaukee area, up like north of Green Bay over on the Michigan border, and then like nothing on the western half of the state. George Webb is a diner, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about George Webb right now. This is from their website. The legend is real. Some restaurants have to make up cool-sounding names and stories to impress you. Why? Because they didn't have George Webb. George was the real deal. He opened his first hamburger parlor in 1948 right here in Milwaukee. George, his wife Evelyn, and their three sons. Jordan, guess the three sons' names. George Webb's three sons. Guess their names.
George, and George. It's like a root.
No, good
situation.
Guess. All one syllable names. All three letters.
Well, this is a spoiler for my good. Bob, Jed,
yes.
And Ben. Bob,
Jim, yep. Tom, and Bob. Jim Webb, Tom Webb, and Bob Webb. They all worked in the restaurant. Burgers with a side of laughs. This is an amazing thing. When a city ordinance prohibited establishments from being open 24 hours a day, George came up with the perfect workaround. He announced George Webb restaurants are open 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 59 seconds, 7 days a week. He hung two clocks 1 minute apart in the restaurants to demonstrate that they were indeed closed and reopened in exact compliance with the law. To this day, every George Webb restaurant has two clocks hanging side by side in honor of that declaration. Now, the history of the promotion, the prediction, the 12 games gets you a burger. It all started with George Webb himself. In the 1940s, with the Brewer teams of the American Association. So this is, we're talking like minor league ball, right? George Webb was a ball knower. He was a grinder. Okay, clearly. He was looking at American Association box scores. Ever the baseball fan and home team booster predicted the team would win 12 games straight. If they managed the feat, George hinted the restaurants would give away free hamburgers. The prediction lived on when Milwaukee's home team became the Braves and continued the tradition when the Brewers took up residence. Finally, on April 19th, 1987, the Brewers did it. 3 days and 168,194 hamburgers later, George Webb fulfilled the payoff to thrilled customers and Brewers fans alike. So since 1987, the Brewers got to 12 wins one other time in 2018. George Webb gave away all the burgers. They're going to do it again. The date is set. It is next week. Wednesday, August 20th, the Brewers are in Chicago that day against the Cubbies. But if you're in the area, head over to your local George Webb, the official, unofficial diner and burger of Baseball Barbercast.
I just love, by the way, that's all on Jake's own. This is not like an official thing. It sounded very much like George Webb is involved.
No free ads. Like George Webb, did not
free ads.
Pay us a dime.
That said, I think that just like one of the great, like out of context baseball, I'll have to send this to Madeline to tweet this out. I just love this tweet where they're announcing it. We just had it up here if you're watching on YouTube, but I just love in the tweet announcing it says, please note, burgers will not be ready right away. It's like, yeah, because realistically, like you have to wait until the 12th win. You can't just start prepping for this and then suddenly you aren't giving out free burgers. So they had to wait for sure. And now we know, as you mentioned, August 20th. All right, Jake, it's time for my good. I'm also fired up about this one. It is a call up. Tampa Bay Rays are calling up Bob Seymour, first base prospect, who has been slugging it up in AAA, just had a 3-homer game the other night. Why is this important? Because Bob Seymour is not really a top prospect. He is, 26 years old, good college career at Wake Forest, but, 13th round pick, and he strikes out a lot. And, who knows how long of a major league career he's going to be. But because his name is Bob, this is a huge deal. Because we have not had a major leaguer go by Bob since Bob Howry, who retired, I think, 15 years ago. And you say, oh, wait a minute. We've got all kinds of Robs and Robbies and Bobbies. That's true. There has not been a Bob on a roster as a player for a long time, as I just mentioned. This is an important distinction. Sure, do some of Bobby Witt Jr.'s teammates call him Bob? Yes. I've talked to Vinny Pasquantino about this. I said, okay, that's nice you call him Bob, but he's not being announced as Bob Witt when he comes to the plate.
No.
And for Bob Seymour,
maybe for Players Weekend.
Right. But for Bob Seymour, this dude born in 1998 to go by Bob is a huge deal. But the reason why this is almost ugly, but I already had a great ugly, is because what makes this so incredible is that Bob was Bobby. He went from Bobby to Bob at some point that I still cannot figure out. Fortunately for me, hopefully Bob Seymour stays on the Rays for 2 more weeks because the Rays are coming to Cleveland and I look forward to asking him. What is incredible is if you look at his player page on MLB, again, when he's at Wake Forest, he's Bobby Seymour. By all accounts, I remember Bobby Seymour. Oh, home run, Bobby Seymour. Gets drafted, Bobby Seymour. You look at his transaction log. He's Bobby Seymour in low A, and then he gets to Bowling Green. And it says April 20th, 21st, 2023, Bowling Green Hot Rods activated Bobby Seymour from the injured list. July 14th, 2023, Bowling Green Hot Rods placed first baseman Bob Seymour on the injured list. So somewhere at the beginning of 2023, he dropped the BY
on his foot and he had to go on the IL.
Right, exactly. And then they had to place Bob on the injured list. And since then, he's just been Bob. This incredible video posted, I believe, from his like high school classic call up video. There's a million genres of these, but this video of the Durham Bulls manager announcing that Bob Seymour is going to the show. You've seen these videos before, but the best part of the video is he announced that all of his teammates are excited for him. There's one moment where someone goes, "Hey, Bobby!" And then there's this raucous chant, "Bob, Bob, 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 Bob," like clearly he is Bob. So congratulations to him. He seems like a just absolutely delightful gentleman. I mean, he seems like personality-wise, looks like the 6'3", 250 first baseman who hits home runs really hard and strikes out a lot. Like he lives up to that kind of energy. And like I said, I hope he can stay in the big leagues for at least a couple weeks so that I can ask him about the evolution of his name Bob Seymour. And yes, if you want to read my story about the Bobs over the course of baseball history, it was on Cut for MLB. I tweeted it out January of 2019. And if this sounds familiar, because the great John Boyes did a whole documentary about Bobs disappearing from professional sports, that is also something you should watch. That is also something that came out 6 months after I wrote this story. So that was some good synergy there. If you want more Bob content, I do recommend the John Boyes Bob Emergency series.
We should try and get Bob on the Bob. Get him on the Bobcast.
I agree. I agree.
My bad. And I can't believe I have to say this.
I can't believe
right
they
there.
Have to say this.
Stop gambling on Little League Baseball. Don't do this anymore. It's not good. It's bad. I don't really think I need to explain to you intelligent listeners that officially gambling on Little League Baseball games is bad. Like, we're not big gamble boys, but like, I think that gambling should be legal. I mean, I think there should be some regulation and restrictions in regards to advertising.
Sure.
I don't think that gambling on Little League should be legal. Some offshore sites, not any of the big old gamble sites were doing this, but some offshore sites were offering odds on like who's going to win the Little League World Series. And it seemed to be significant enough that Little League tweeted out an official statement. It's weird. It's about the poll odds. No, I'm kidding. While Little League International continues to monitor the complexity and ever-evolving world of sports betting, we feel strongly that there is no place for betting on Little League games or on any youth sports competition. Little League is a trusted place where children are learning the fundamentals of games, yada, yada, yada. Now, some people were criticizing this and being like, but you're making money off of the kids. This, you know, is presented by T-Mobile. And like, is there something occasionally uncomfortable about these kids being on TV and on ESPN? Like, yeah, sure, whatever. I also, having worked, for a Little League, a lot of that money gets sent back into the Little League program, right? It's not as if the person who's running Little League has like seven vacation houses here. So I understand that criticism, but I think that we should be able to separate that reality and don't gamble on 12-year-olds.
And
if you really need to, if you really need to gamble on 12-year-olds, just find a buddy, right? Just find a buddy and just be, just be like, hey, $10 on Mid-Atlantic. Great. You really got to do it that way.
I was wondering, I didn't really see what prompted this. I don't know if this was something that they were just like preemptively going to put out, but this is the first time we've seen them, Little League, put out an official statement about this. So obviously agree with everything what you're saying. And yes, I have heard and understand I don't think it's relevant to this specific thing, but I hear people think that that it is still exploiting the kids' experience to put it on TV and all these things. I hear that. I disagree with it, but I hear it and I get it. But I will say, having been there, having done it, having covered it, this is truly one of the few like pure things we have. event that just brings so much joy, and it's, by the way, free admission. Like, just that alone is an amazing thing that I'm not sure people realize. Like, if you go to Williamsport, like, this is, it's just such an event that means a lot to people, and obviously has this rich history. And I know that there's parts of it that are still a little weird, but I love it. I'm excited to be back. And yeah, this is another example where it's like, come on, let's not ruin this. So anyway, I'll talk more about my Williamsport experience next week after I am there. All right, my bad this week. Back to the big leagues. The Nationals DFA'd Nathaniel Lowe. Now, is this decision bad? Probably not, considering Nathaniel Lowe among qualified hitters was tied for the lowest Fangraphs WAR in Major League Baseball. Do you know who he's tied with, by the way, at -0.8? I don't know if you pulled this up. It's kind of a bleak trio.
Andrew Vaughn.
It was Andrew Vaughn. That's true. A couple months ago, Eric Wagaman with the Marlins. And Nick Castellanos.
There needs to be a Nick Castellanos conversation at some point.
Okay. All right. We'll do that another time. But anyway, this is bad because it's just a bummer. Like, Nathaniel Lowe, he's a good dude, easy to root for. This seemed like a move that like signaled the Nationals trying to move in the right direction. And this is one that just absolutely flopped. Someone that they thought they were going to have for multiple years. He is, if someone picks him up again, he's because he's making so much an arb, like he was going to get non-tendered anyway, and they decide to just move on from him now. But this move is just representative of just kind of how this season has gone in a lot of ways. And that is what is bad, because even obviously if Nathaniel Lowe was good, it's not like the Nationals would be in first place, but it is still another example of just a, kind of the last part of the Rizzo resume that just did not go super awesome. And I hope he catches on somewhere. I hope he bounces back. There's still probably a future for him in the big leagues. He literally hit a grand slam the other day, and that was, I guess, his last moment as a National before he got DFA'd. So will we see Nathaniel Lowe again this season? I'm not sure, but I hope he can come back to the big leagues at some point. It will not be with the Washington Nationals.
My ugla is this picture that SNY tweeted out of a 97-year-old woman holding up a sign at the Mets game that says, 97 years young, go Poppy, number 22. That's awesome, right? Like a 97-year-old woman referring to Juan Soto as Poppy. As if, yes, like she was passing him on the street and was like, what's up, Poppy? Like, this is great. The reason this is an ugla is because the Mets had probably their most embarrassing loss of the whole season that night. They
tough week for the Mets.
Tough week for the Mets. Eesh. Very Wilpon-y week in Queens. Yes. The Mets put up three in the bottom of the first, three in the bottom of the second. They just bludgeoned Carlos Carrasco. And they got David Peterson on the mound. He's like their only good pitcher now. And it's like the Mets are going to win this baseball game. Pete Alonso broke the franchise record last night. Like, everything's feeling pretty good, right? And then the Braves just come storming back, and they score 9 runs in the top of the fourth. As far as I can tell, this, I can't really figure out when this picture was tweeted relative to the score. The effort required to take a 97-year-old person to a baseball game is significant, right? Like, the logistical heft of that, the lift that requires, like, I'm very sympathetic to that and to this family. Maybe she went alone. I will take the under.
If that's true, that's all the more amazing. Yeah.
All the more amazing. But just the idea that maybe she went home before the fourth. You know, maybe she's on the Mets go up 6-0 and was like, bedtime.
Seen enough.
But maybe not. But and so I am,
maybe not.
I feel a little bit bad for the family that probably put in a lot of time and effort to like get Granny out to the yard.
Yeah.
And then it was like going great. I think Poppy homered.
It was.
In this game early. And then
it's tough.
Just Michael tough. Harris grand slam off Reed Garrett. Not ideal.
Braves are like, wait a minute. We have good baseball players. A little late, guys.
Oh yeah.
A little late. I know you just crushed the Marlins and the Mets. Like, where was this all season? Anyway, I agree. That is pretty ugly. My ugly was almost the Mets running out of fireworks, but I instead have to focus on what happened in a recent game between the Augusta Green Jackets and Kannapolis Cannonballers. I already quote tweeted this clip and said ugly. Which, by the way, like, I love doing that when I see something and I think it's ugly. I just say ugly because, like, anyone that likes that is listening to the podcast, because otherwise you would be like, what does this even mean? So I appreciate that. Anyway, what am I talking about? George Wolkow is a very interesting prospect in the White Sox system. He is an enormous left-handed hitter.
Huge.
With ridiculous raw pass. He is huge. And he swings the bat really hard. And
Aaron Judge
strikes out a lot.
Starter kit. Like, when I say starter kit, I mean, like, we got to germinate. We're germinating seeds. Okay. Like, this is beyond IKEA. You need to go find the wood in the forest yourself.
6'7", 240 pounds, George Wolkow. But George Wolkow was in a bit of an awkward situation as he stepped into the box against Ethan Bagwell of the Augusta Green Jackets. Runners on first and second, one out. He steps in And I don't really know what prompted him to want to call time before the first pitch, but he wanted to call time. He guessed he wasn't ready. I don't know if it was, you know, whatever. Tries to call time. Is not granted time. As Ethan Bagwell is about to throw the pitch, like he's releasing the pitch, and George is essentially stepping backwards out of the batter's box because he thinks he's getting time. Now, this is something you do see in the big leagues where a guy thinks he got time and didn't call time, steps out, and there's like this awkward moment where the pitch is thrown, and sometimes it's just called a ball or a strike, and the ump's like, sorry, dude, like you didn't get time. And other times the ump's like, okay, sorry, yeah, that pitch doesn't count. In this case, we get neither of those outcomes. Because despite being on his back foot and holding the bat with one hand, as the pitch is coming, George just kind of swipes at this pitch with his left arm and just ropes it down the line. And again, the replay, the video, because this is A-ball and we're not getting a million camera angles, you don't see exactly where the ball goes, and you don't, like, I feel like we're getting cheated out of like everyone's reaction to this because of how kind of condensed this clip is and because of the way that it's edited, or the way that it was shot at the time on MLB TV. That said, it's one of the goofiest highlights I've ever seen in my life. And essentially, it drives in a run. First of all, like, I think what is so important about this is George Wolkow, because I don't think there's that many hitters that could swing the bat like this with one hand.
Absolutely.
And hit it like this. But he's one of them. So we are very grateful. But it's also so funny because this is a dude that strikes out 30% of the time. And for him to make contact in these circumstances with one hand is also hilarious. So tough for Ethan Bagwell. Awesome for George Wolkow. And I will continue to watch this clip many years from now. Ugla.
Ugla could do this.
Ugla probably could do this. That's actually a great point. So that is why it's Ugla. Sometimes Ugla does relate back to Dan himself. Although again, like it also helps to be left-handed in this case. Like it's almost like an accidental Ichiro situation where he's like kind of going out of the box on his way. If you haven't seen this, it's so good.
The thing about this video, yeah, very briefly, it has, I'm a parent playing with a ball in the backyard with my kid, and anytime I choose to show a little athletic ability, like my kid thinks I'm a god.
Just if you pull up this video, just pause it when the ball is in the air and just look at George Wolkow and try and understand what is about to happen. It's so funny. It's just so ugly.
It's singular. Anyway. Yeah.
It's so good. I've never seen anything like it. Baseball's lovely. All right. That's it. We're done. Thank you all for listening. Watch Dodgers Padres. Obviously, I'm heading to Williamsport. I'm very excited about that. I will be there for the Mariners Mets Little League Classic. All kinds of coverage coming for that. If you are going to be there, say hello if you see me. I guess I'm excited to see all the, you know, I guess it's Players Weekend, right? So that's a thing that like is still a thing that is cool, even if it is not maybe what it used to be when people had nicknames on the back of their jerseys, but you'll see all kinds of fun equipment, which is always cool. Any other notable series this weekend that we're keeping an eye on? I know the Brewers, I guess, will continue to try to win. Anything else stand out?
Mariners-Mets.
Mariners-Mets is good. Big time. Both teams had a bad week. And so it's also interesting when like the Little League Classic is like a game that's really important for both teams. So that is one that is, again, it's not going to, like, they're still going to have a good time and it'll be a nice, you know, good vibes. But once they actually get over there to the minor league park, like, yeah, it's going to be pretty, pretty important. And that will be Sunday Night Baseball, of course. So Mariners Mets is definitely, as far as postseason teams, I think pretty clearly the best series besides Dodgers Padres. But man, Dodgers Padres is like far and away the best series this weekend from what I can tell. So hopefully people can
lock into that.
Yes. All right, we're done. Thank you to Mookie Betts for joining us. That was pretty cool. Sure. Thank you to Andrew Hartz, TJ Passel, everyone at Yahoo Sports for making this show possible. We really appreciate it. We hope everyone has a good weekend. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And I will be speaking to you from a hotel in Pennsylvania on Monday morning to recap the Lilly Classic, and so much more from the weekend. Will the Dodgers be in first place? Will the Padres be in first place? We know the Giants won't be on that unnecessary stray. We will end this podcast. Thank you all for listening. Have a good weekend. Goodbye.